In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Today's Mass is being offered in honor of St. Anthony, our patron. Today, we have a great grace, because here within our midst is someone who is very great. Talking about St. Cecilia. St. Cecilia. Also, Elisa, it's good to see you too, back. It's good to have you. This upcoming Friday, if you got some time and you're not finished just being totally overdone by whatever food or eating you do on Thursday and Thanksgiving, you know, pray for young Cynthia. Thank you. I couldn't get the name out. Cynthia. I kept trying to say Cindy in my mind. Cynthia. Because she's going to have her quinceañera finally after being 15 for so long here. We're finally going to be able to do it. So please pray for her as she does the scariest thing she's ever done in her life, which is going to pray here in the church after her Thanksgiving, after her quinceañera Mass. Giving thanks to God and to her family for the graces bestowed on her at this time. Please continue to keep her in prayer. Remember that the Thanksgiving Mass will be here within our church at 10 a.m. here in St. Anthony's. If you just happen to be in Santa Rosa and you want to go to Mass there, it'll be at 9:30. So just 30 minutes time difference, whichever one you wish to go to. It's not a day of obligation. You don't have to be at Mass. Thanksgiving Mass is only for those who are thankful. So if you're not thankful, don't come. But if you are thankful, there's an opportunity for you to give thanks at the Eucharist. Does anybody know anything about the saint that we celebrate today, Santa Cecilia, Saint Cecilia?
She sang. She's in the choir.
Okay, patroness of music. Anything else? You said you were making facial movements over there. Do you know anything other than that? No, just that. You don't know anything either, so you're telling me, don't ask me. Okay, I wasn't about to, but you can study those things too. You've got books on that as well. Saint Cecilia is an incredible saint. I love the saint so much. In Rome, every year, maybe I tell you this all the time, I don't know, I probably do, but I used to go to her, where she was buried, where she died, in that beautiful gargantuan church that she's in, every single year. And I would pass this day in the evening, as soon as I could get free, to go over there and just to pray. They'd have a beautiful Mass where all the first communicants, the young boys, the young girls would be there, and there'd be tons of them, because they have a beautiful parish school that's there with lots and lots of these little kids who from the surrounding area. And they would have a big Mass. They'd have it preached by a cardinal or a bishop, I'm not sure which, who was there. Beautiful music that was played the whole time in the evening, and just tons of families all over the place. And I would be one of those who was kind of hiding over there on the edges of the church, just observing the beauty that was there and trying to eventually squeeze my way into the place where Saint Cecilia was actually martyred, where she was killed and slain over on, when you're facing the tabernacle, over on the right side toward the back of the church. Saint Cecilia was a great saint. She was given to a deep, profound love of God from her very earliest years in this time when Catholicism was illegal. It was illegal to be a Christian at that time. And so, when she was finally forced, really, to marry, because she was a noble woman, a woman of noble birth, on her wedding night, on that time when a man and a wife are supposed to give one another joy in that blessed marital bed that was there, she turned to her husband, because it was not always custom that the bride and the groom would spend much time together before their wedding night at that time. She turned to her and finally disclosed her heart to him. And she said these words. She said, "Pure is my heart, and it's undefiled is my flesh." She's saying, "I'm totally a virgin, both in my mind and also within my heart. I don't take in lust, and I've never been touched in this way or defiled." She said, "For I have a spouse you know not of. He's the angel of the Lord." And when she confessed her faith in that way on this marrow bed, so moved was the heart of her husband, who had just taken her and really was a man of good heart and wanted to love her profoundly, at that moment, seeing that she was so possessed at this moment, and said it with such confidence that he said, "Whatever it is that you believe, I want to believe that too. I want to take that in." And so right there on the marital bed, which is normally a time when one gives into carnal desires, really, she converted her husband in that way to give into spiritual desires. So she shared her bride with him in that way. And he accepted the faith interiorly that night and then sought, therefore, soon to be baptized. He then, in turn, shared that with his dear brother, who happened to be his best man. The very next day, I believe it was, or maybe he left immediately from that chamber right there, because there was always somebody listening in to make sure that they completed the marital act so that it would be a valid marriage in that way. And so he too was converted. And the two of them were so full of God's love in that way, so full of a passion for this Christ who had given them new faith. They felt the saving waters of baptism really wash over them, the confirmation give them strength to be soldiers for Christ, that they could not be silent about their faith. And so ahead of Cecilia, these two men gave their lives. They were found out to be Christians, and they were martyred very shortly thereafterwards. But Cecilia was there, left at the end, and given many opportunities to recant her belief and so to take another way forward and not have to die the same death. She refused and said, "You're only going to send me to my Lord." And so they devised a very cruel torture for her, not to have her head removed from her body, but rather to be placed within a room and suffocated. And the way they did suffocation to her was to heat the room. Heat the room in such a way so that the air would become thinner and thinner and thinner, unable to breathe, just like, sadly, some people die sometimes in a fire, not by the flames, but by the lack of oxygen and suffocation in that way. And so she was exposed to that, so to be quickly happening. But by divine grace, she was not touched by that. She was still breathing just fine, though suffering interiorly. She was joyfully doing so, and with whatever breath she could take into herself, she would let out with song. She would let out with song, singing in that way to her bride, because she knew that shortly after this, she was going to see him. But for some reason, God's grace on her, the special grace, that she did not die from that suffocation. So angry were her attackers that they came by, and one who was charged finally to dispatch her. So he took his blade, his gladius out there, his sword, and then went to go sever her head from her body. And when he went to do so, he went one time. Though sharp the blade, it did not cut her spine. He went a second time, went again, still could not go through her. A third time, once again, and went there and struck her upon the neck, and still did not penetrate her spine, just leaving her there half dead, as it were, with these three slices within her neck, yet still untouched. The law said that if somebody survived three strokes of the blade, they were not to be dispatched. They were just to be left. And if they survived, whatever crime was against them was forgiven, and they could never be tried again for it, because it would be a truly divine or work of the gods for them not to be dispatched in three strokes. So she was left that way. And for 2 days she suffered, 2 days suffering with that, the whole while saying, I just want to be with the Lord, and joyfully, not holding anything against those who had accused her, those who had dispatched her in this way, but just longing to be with God, and with whatever she could muster from her voice, she would continue to sing, because she wanted to be with God. She said, I'll sing to him now, and I'll sing to him forevermore, as the Psalms say. Here's a side note. St. Cecilia, in addition to this, didn't just have these great experiences in this way, but by another miracle, she was incorrupt. Many years later, I don't know how many years, but it was certainly more than a few centuries, she was still found to be totally supple in skin, as though she had just passed away within her tomb when it was opened up. The bishop who had seen it, and there was a great artist who was there looking there, because he was hoping to see something about her, because he was going to commission a great artwork about her. So he wanted to see from her bones that were there, maybe he could put flesh on them in his own mind and get the size and scope of how big or how small she was in this way, and was surprised to find her totally intact. Just as though she had just recently passed away, seeing within her neck, indeed, those three slices within her neck, proving that it was really her. So if you go to the church there, if you look up it on the internet right now, you'll see the marble image that this very same artist carved of her, and it has her just as she was laying on her side as he found her within the coffin, and with the three cuts upon her neck, just as he saw them there. Isn't that a great grace? An amazing tribute of God, where it says within the scriptures, even their bodies will not know decay, the ones of his faithful ones, because they remain faithful to the end. And so this is a story that should bring excitement to you and I, and it's a testament that God does work miracles within the lives of his saints. Within the first reading that you gave us there, it's of what, of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, who are there, who we know they tested God, saying, we're not going to do anything that's going to defile our bodies with unclean meats that we know we're not supposed to eat. We're not going to drink the things that we're not supposed to drink, because our God says we should not do these things as good Jews. So even though, Chamberlain, you think you're going to be hurt because we're not going to look as good and you're going to have a retaliation against you, just let us try 10 days this way and see if we're not good or better than those who are around us. And what happened? What happened was it? You read it. What was found, Elisa? What?
What was the question?
How were they found? After the 10 days of trial of eating just leeks and vegetables and other things and not having fine fat meats and drinking wine in this way. Super healthy, super strong, and super smart. Way smarter than the other guys who were there. And so he allowed them to continue on vegetables and not to defile their consciences with these impure foods. And so God entrusts in the Old Testament. He provides for faithfulness in the New Testament. He provides for faithfulness. And so you two and I can see that when we are faithful, even in ways that seem nonsensical to the rest of the world, that God does bless that. Even though they slay us, God is the one who brings us back. So let that be something that encourages you here toward the end of the year, and whatever difficulty you're struggling with, and whatever unfaithfulness may occur to you that seems nonsensical to the world, but is totally sensical according to God's laws, that he is faithful to the end. We see it in the lives of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego here. You're going to see it again later on in the week if you follow the readings, when they are put to the trial and thrown into the fiery furnace, and God saves them there. And you'll see it. You see it again with our saint today. And so these things to inspire us to deeper faithfulness, that God is in control of everything, and he does indeed bail out, preserve, and bring to a glorious end those who remain faithful to him. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. ¿Por qué conocemos la viuda en el Evangelio? Why do we know that she exists in reality? Ni tú y yo habríamos pensado en ella. Todo nos habría parecido normal a nuestros ojos, pero no a Jesús. Jesús es diferente de nosotros. Solo Jesús podría haber visto que esta viuda, al dar su pequeño regalo, un regalo todo lo que tenía, todo su sustento, ahora estaba abandonado a la dependencia total en la familia o amigos, pero en realidad conocemos nosotros, estaba abandonada a la divina providencia. ¿Por qué fue tan grande su regalo? Ella dio más que todos los demás porque se dio a sí misma con un corazón lleno de entrega. No retuvo nadie de lo que tenía. ¿Hay algo que podamos dar a Dios que nos haya dado ya? Hay una cosa, ¿sabes qué es? Podemos dar a Dios nuestra entrega confiada. La pobre viuda dio su regalo a Dios con confianza. Sabía que Dios se seguiría cuidando de ella. Su único deseo en su vida era estar con Él y enriquecerse con Él. Nada más tenía valor o peso por su corazón. Su entrega era pacífica y resignado. No era desprezamente, sino que estaba llena de esperanza en su vida. La viuda tenía la esperanza de, quién sabe, en lo más profundo, de su ser, cuánto la ama Dios. ¿Cuándo confiamos en Dios? ¿Cuándo dependemos de Él? ¿Qué sucede en nuestro corazón cuando todo otro refugio en nuestra vida comienza a desaparecer? El amor crece con gratitud y con la generosidad. Jesús enseña que el verdadero dar debe salir de corazón. Un regalo que se da con rencor o para que otros lo vean pierde su valor. Pero un regalo dado por amor, un regalo dado con un espíritu de generosidad y sacrificio, es precioso a Dios, tan precioso. La cantidad o el tamaño del regalo no es importante tanto como el coste para el que lo da. La pobre viuda podría haberse quedado con una de sus monedas, pero en lugar es eso, dio todo lo que tenía. Jesús alabó a alguien que dio apenas un centavo, una suma de dinero muy insignificante, pero era todo lo que tenía, todo su medio de vida. It was all that she had. It was her very self, everything she had to rely on, and that's why it was precious to God. Eso agrada a Dios, porque Él quiere ser todo nuestro medio de la vida. De hecho, eso es lo que da a nosotros en la Eucaristía, que recibimos todas las veces que estamos preparados en la misa. Es su presencia viva, es todo su ser. La Eucaristía es todo Cristo. It's all of Him. He doesn't give us part of Himself in the smallest piece or the greatest bit of the Eucharist. We get all of Jesus. And that is how the example for you and me. ¿Pensamos a esto cuando recibimos la Eucaristía? ¿Y nosotros hace querer darle lo mismo de nosotros mismos a Dios? En realidad, debería. Pensámoslo en esta Eucaristía. En el nombre del Padre, del Hijo y del Espíritu Santo.